don't know if this is a lame way to start an interview or not, but I do have a burning question. It is related to names. You met in Chicago, Libby lived in New York, and you're now based in Nashville. Where did Dallas Ugly come from?
Yeah, I've noticed this as we, you know, we were on tour last week through the Midwest and trying to tell people our story because it's one of the first times we've really gone out. And so this ends up coming up a lot is like we're mentioning we're from Chicago, we live in Nashville, we've got this band name that has Dallas in it. None of us are from Dallas, or I don't think any of us have ever even been to Dallas. I've never been there. And furthermore, I don't think I even know anyone in Dallas. But where this band name came from is a few years ago when we were kind of setting the groundwork for this project. We kind of already had some demos recorded. We were trying to send them out to people and thinking about recording an album. And we still didn't have a band name. And it was kind of like the last thing on the list to do in order to like start putting some stuff out there.
Yep.
And it's such a bummer to have to like send people music and be like, we're still working on a name, but let us know if you think this is interesting. You know, and that was our unfortunate position for a little bit. So we gave ourselves a deadline and we just put a date on the calendar and said, by this day, we're going to have a band name. And that's that. We'll figure it out. And Jake, I don't know if you can relate to this, if you've played in bands yourself. I'm not super familiar with your background, but coming up with a good band name is like the hardest thing in the world.
Oh, well, I mean, I watch Parks and Recreation, so I know the mouse rat situation I watched up close and personal.
Right. Like I always say, if you like actually think critically about your favorite bands and consider what their band name is, it's probably not actually a good band name. And maybe we should actually take that to like take some pressure off ourselves and say like, well, there's just no good band name, so it is what it is, you know. But a good band name is just so dang hard. And so we were coming up to this deadline and we were really in the phase of anything anyone said, we would ask ourselves, is that a band name? Is that our band name? Is that who we're going to be? And it came down to the day on the calendar that we had to have a name. And I just by coincidence was chatting on the phone with a friend of mine, Adam, who still lives in Chicago. And he was telling me about how he had gone on a Hinge date the week prior with a woman who had just moved to Chicago from Dallas.
Mm.
And in like the first 10 minutes of the date, this woman says, she goes, you know, Hinge here in Chicago sucks because everyone on Hinge here is really ugly. And everyone on Hinge in Dallas is really hot. But you're okay, so that's why I'm here. And my friend, God bless him, stuck it out for the rest of the date. Like, continued to hang out with her.
We lost him. Wow, right? Right at the climax of that story, too.
Where'd he go? Our boy.
Eli, you can pick it up. This is actually a part in the story where you say that Owen always...
True. Owen does always slight me. So I hired an assassin to kill him. And so that my starring role in this story can be played out like this.
Well, your timing was perfect.
Yes, thank you. Perfect. I paid good money for that assassin. I mean, I told him exactly what part of the story to kill Owen.
Yeah. Excellent.
Well, okay, so yeah, we're having one of these brainstorming sessions. Owen had talked to his friend previously, and we were just like the three of us banging our heads against a wall, and just in a moment of like, okay, we need to stop brainstorming, Owen told us that exact story that he just told you. And then I was like, just talking about his friend Adam, I was like, does that make Adam Chicago hot and Dallas okay? And Owen's nice. Like, no, I think it makes him Chicago okay and Dallas ugly. And then because we've been saying this to literally everything anyone said that day, I was just like, is that our band name? Dallas Ugly? And then
we're Dallas Ugly.
Right. Yeah, yes, we are actually Dallas Ugly.
Well, that's great. See, I'm glad I asked because that's a great story. it, you know, of course, told at the expense of Owen's life, but...
Am I back? Can you guys hear me?
Yeah. Sorry we lost you there, Owen. Everything okay now?
No, it doesn't. I didn't experience any change on my end. I just refreshed the page, so I'm not sure.
Oh, sorry about that. So Eli did pick up right where you left off, and and we did get the conclusion of that story. Listen, I think it's great, and I actually, you asked me if I could relate. I can absolutely relate. When we were coming up with the name for this business, it was taking so long, and like work wasn't getting done, that eventually I was like, no, fuck it, we're going with something. And at the time, it was a much different business too. You know, heavily focused on like creating a platform for acoustic and live shows. and so it was like, all right, we're going with set list. We can change it later if we want. And that's it. Like, we just need to be working instead of like spending all of our meetings talking about what the name of the business is going to be. Let's actually have a business. So while I haven't been in a band, I have had a very similar experience.
Relatable.
You just got to find something that doesn't make you cringe every time you say it to someone, where you're like, it's Dallas Ugly? But for some reason, this was the only name, even though it's like kind of a cringe name. It's like the only thing that I think all three of us were like, I don't feel weird every time I say this.
No, I don't think it's cringe at all, to be honest. In fact, it leaves like a lot of mystery and a lot of like, I was looking everywhere for, you know, like Easter eggs and stuff. I was like, you know, is it in a Tom Waits song? Is it like, you know, it sounds like I'm searching everywhere. You know, is it a Lyle Lovett reference? Like,
that would be in a Lyle Lovett song for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Right. So, no, I think it's perfect. You know, and it's funny, I was looking on, you guys had a very successful Kickstarter campaign and got this whole thing going.
Yeah.
And I was really interested to know, you kind of in the Kickstarter mention, you know, talk about all of your guys' experiences and what you bring to the table, which I would love to get into. But you do proclaim like this is going to be a country album. And it kind of occurred to me that with everybody's very diverse background in music, and everybody here's done several really interesting projects that don't necessarily correlate to a country music album. What was it? It seemed like you guys basically had the freedom to choose what genre this was going to take. And so what made you think that country was going to be the best genre for this kind of coming of age album?
You know, it's interesting. Like, you're right that I would say none of us come from a primarily country background. And I know that this is a thing across the board, especially with new bands, is that everybody thinks they don't fit in a genre at all, and nobody wants to, like, they always want to give, like, a 40-word descriptor of what their genre is. And on the one hand, I think like just saying country is kind of easy, and I think does make sense for the actual like aesthetic of the album. But it also kind of comes from just in our process of making this music, as we were collaborating with more people. You know, when we brought in Alex Spiegelman, our producer, when we were in the studio, you know, some amount of days in, we'd already worked on quite a bit of music, and he says like, yeah, this is kind of my first real country album I'm working on. And we're like, huh, I guess this is kind of a country album. And then when we were working with Dave Cinco on mixing, who is someone who works a ton in country music, is kind of a legend in country music, he, you know, felt compelled to be like, you know, this is a good country album. So there's something about it where I think yes, the music is kind of country, but there, it's maybe not so specific that people involved in it feel compelled to just say, like, just so you know, this is still country, you know? So
right.
I would say in that kind of way, we maybe kind of backed into it. I mean, we were just working. We just wanted to make music that sounded good to us and that we were moved by, you know? So it wasn't It wasn't like, oh, how can we make this more country? Or it wasn't, I would say, premeditated in that way, but it's just kind of something that we found through the process of making the album.
It's cool to hear that it kind of happened as an organic process. Like you said, he backed into it, because maybe I was attributing my own interpretation when I said it's like a coming of age album, but to me, that is what it felt like. And I'm a huge fan of that genre, no matter what the medium, whether it's film or music or whatever. And I do think the sound that you guys found for it and it being more country does lend itself to that feeling, that nostalgia. And I don't know if it would have had the same emotional ring if it would have been in a different genre, I guess.
And I would say, honestly, like, everything Owen's saying is true, but I would say, like, it happened even more. It was almost unavoidable because, like, the way all of these songs, like, my background, we all have, like, several different musical lives, but my most recent background is playing, like, old-time fiddle music. Mm-hmm. And Eli's most recent background is playing, like, a lot of, like, bluegrass bass. And, like, Owen wrote a lot of the songs that made it on the album, like, with an acoustic guitar when he was in the Peace Corps, because that's, like, all that he had. So it was, like, when we came together to play them, our initial instinct was, oh, let's play them all with our acoustic instruments informed by these backgrounds that we come from. And we were like, yikes, like, this is not right. Like, the acoustic thing isn't right, but there's some part of this, like, acoustic bluegrass old time lineage that will work. And it ended up being the more, like, electric country Americana side of things. So yeah, initially a lot of these songs were arranged to be, like, very cringy, like, pseudo bluegrass songs. And we were like, this is wrong. This is wrong. Like, this is not working. But yeah, it was definitely like an evolution of all of the songs, I would say.
Yeah, it ended up getting a very distinct sound, because it is there's really great contrast. So, like, you guys have the song St. Louis, which feels like a through and through country song. It sounds like it could appear, like, on a Charlie Crockett album. And then you also have like these occasionally throughout the album, you'll hear, like, these, like, lo-fi beats, which is really cool. I'm sure it exists, but nothing comes to mind when I think of that. And, like, the atmosphere it created around the music was, yeah, really cool, like, really nostalgic, and, like, just gave me, like, Perks of Being a Wallflower vibes.
Oh, that's awesome. That's one of my favorite movies.
I feel like we have our producer, Alec, to thank for much of that. I mean, that was kind of Libby's inspiration to reach out to Alec. And it, honestly, Libby had the idea to reach out to Alec, like, quite early on in the formation. Like, that idea was floating around ever since we had the idea of recording this album. And we're like, we should have a producer. And Alec's name, I mean, it was like Alec's name and then just whoever else. And then the other option was just somebody else. And we ended up going with Alec because we never thought of anyone else who we thought would do a better job.
That's cool.
As we dug into, like, just some of the records that he's produced and his own music, you know, under his own name or with Cuddle Magic, we realized that pretty much everything he makes is just so, so musical, if for lack of a better term. Like, it has so much, like, heart to it and emotion, and, like, it just, like, really breathes in a cool and natural way that we wanted to make sure that our music breathed in, especially considering, I don't know, like, this was kind of a new territory or something like it for the three of us, with, like, drums and, like, electric guitars. And I feel like you can kind of go wrong with it, can, like, end up being, like, cheesy or something with, like, electric instruments. Like, you can kind of you can kind of make
it. I think any music can end up being cheesy if you don't know what you're doing.
Exactly. Totally. Yeah. Right. And as Libby said, we came from acoustic stuff. So it's like, you know, it could be like, you know, baby playing with electric guitar for the first time. We didn't do it right. And we wanted somebody to help us out who, like, yeah, we just thought, like, always kind of had musicality as the number one priority. So, yeah, Alec, you know, came to us with, instead of click tracks to record to, like, literal, like, as you put, beats, like, we were recording these. Some of them made it on the album, and most of them didn't. But, like, we were recording to, like techno beats almost, you know, like, stuff that Alec had made. And maybe it'd have like a snippet of the song on loop, but otherwise it was like electronic drum beat or like bits of whatever that he cut together, or, you know, clarinet sounds. Like, it was super, super inspiring stuff to track to.
Yeah. And it was super subtle. It just was very interesting because, like you said, sometimes, I don't know, things can be overproduced or sound like they're trying really hard to get this like new innovative sound or whatever. And it ended up with a very earnest sound to it, which I think was your intention.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. It definitely was. And yeah, we owe Alec a debt of gratitude for helping us.
Yeah. So we kind of glossed right over it, but I'm a little bit aware of how you came together, but I am very curious about how you met and then the time in between and then how this project got off the ground, you know, almost 12 years later or 10 years later. I'm sorry.
We got the band back together successfully.
On a mission from Gad.
Exactly. And it even did take us all the way back to Chicago years later, so it's kind of cool in that way.
Definitely.
So we all met as freshmen in the dorms at the DePaul School of Music in Chicago, and we were all studying classical music, and we just kind of got together at the end of our freshman year. We were all three close friends just from living in the same building and being in school together. But kind of toward the end of our freshman year, we just had an urge to like do some stuff that wasn't classical after being so deep in the classical game all year. And we truly had no idea what we were doing. We were playing stuff that was like vaguely bluegrass or like vaguely old time, but mostly just, you know, misinformed acoustic music is maybe the best genre for it. And we, you know, formed a little band around that at the time was just the three of us. And we would gig around Chicago, but we were, you know, still the three of us each primarily focused on our classical studies and everything. But it was a project basically throughout college for us. And then when we graduated, Libby went on to grad school at NYU. So she moved out to New York and Eli stayed in Chicago, and he had kind of broken through on the Chicago bluegrass scene. So he was playing bass in a bunch of different groups around Chicago. And then I decided to go into the Peace Corps. So I was in Senegal for 2 years, and so that was basically the end of that former iteration of the band, and we figured was likely the last iteration of the three of us playing together in any, like, formal sense anyways. But then as I was, like, approaching the end of my Peace Corps term, which is 2 years, I had about 6 months left, and Eli got in touch with me and just started like laying the groundwork for like, we should go on a little tour when you get back and we can get Libby out here and maybe you and I move to Nashville and we work on getting Libby to move to Nashville. We can like really get the band back together. And, you know, I was sitting in a hut in the desert at the time, like, I don't know, man, like, that seems pretty far away, but I also didn't have any plans for after I came back to the States, so it didn't sound half bad. So then fast forward, I finished my service. I come back at the in the beginning of 2020, and I have a little homecoming party in Chicago that Libby comes out for. So yeah, we're reunited. We had a short little tour lined up, just kind of around the Midwest, and then it was gonna end in Nashville, where Eli and I were going to move, and then Libby was going to go back to New York for the foreseeable future after that run. And of course, this was the beginning of 2020, so that homecoming party was on March 7th of 2020. And our first show on this run was slated to be March 25th. So that, of course, didn't happen. And furthermore, we all ended up, you know, in those initial lockdowns being stuck in the Midwest, which was none of our plans. But in that lockdown, we kind of used that time to, like, share some songs we'd all written in our years apart and kind of reconsider the, you know, our potential future musical collaboration and everything. And yeah, we just decided, like, you know, while the world kind of falls apart, why not just use this opportunity to take a chance and put this band back together for real and kind of reimagine it, since, you know, the songs we had exchanged over the last few years were quite different from what we were doing all the way back in college. And, you know, it was kind of interesting, and this kind of ended up being the concept of the album, is that like kind of song exchange that happened in that time was really a way for us to catch up from our years apart. And we, you know, ultimately did kind of want the album to feel like friends catching up after, you know, a long time, and, you know, just sharing stories of like, oh, here's this terrible lesson I learned, or check out this blunder, and oh yeah, and I was really homesick at this time and wish this had kind of gone that way. You know, those things that kind of maybe plague your early 20s and also maybe plague your entire life. And so yeah, that kind of ended up being what those sessions were, as we were first considering this new band and considering this new collection of music we were going to start working on, was that it really was just like friends catching up after a long time. And so that's kind of where the album title came from as well, Watch Me Learn, because we just kind of, we all realized that we had songs that were about similar topics, even though we wrote them worlds apart from each other. So yeah, that's kind of how we formed and how we've been playing together, you know, off and on for about 10 years now. Now in our second iteration, but still in some ways the same.
Yeah, it's cool. I was curious about the songwriting, because I had read that, you know, a lot of the songs were written ahead of time, or maybe during your stay with the, or your service with the Peace Corps, Owen. But the songs are very cohesive, and I wondered how many maybe were written as a trio, or if they were all kind of what you had each been individually working on and then brought together for this project.
Yeah, we pretty much write, in terms of like lyrics and melody, those are written individually, at least for this album. I think every song fits that description. But all of the arrangement and even like chord decisions and everything beyond lyrics and melody are written totally collaboratively. So it is kind of interesting. I think for a while we were feeling like this album was maybe too eclectic, or like too high variety, to feel to the point of maybe being disjointed. Just because like all three of us take turns singing lead on it, and there's three kind of distinct songwriting styles on it. But ultimately, I think it did, especially with the help of Alec and kind of his more aesthetic production decisions, I think it did kind of end up feeling cohesive, just in that like what gives the album and this band in general kind of our cohesive sound is that we do have our own voice, that is the three of our voices, and our own, you know, arrangement voice, because we arrange all of these songs together. So I don't know, there's kind of like a philosophical question of like, how much of a song is the lyrics and melody? And I think the answer is like, actually not that much when you're talking about a full band. So, you know, that like, maybe that like first 20% that is lyrics and melody, that is completely individual for this group of music. We all wrote those totally on our own. And many of these songs before we even knew that this group was going to be where that music lived. But then, you know, that arrangement that happened collaboratively is what brought all these into the same like sonic space.
Yeah, so did you have a method for who was going to take the lead on each song, or was it based on who wrote the song, or were there any circumstances where it was different and you thought, oh, maybe Libby would be better to do this, or Owen would be better for this, or Eli for this?
Well, in the past, we had kind of considered, like, you know, just because someone wrote the song, does that mean they should sing lead? But then as it gets passed from like writer to singer, we always run into this issue where the singer wants to like change lyrics, and what if we did it this way? And oh, I kind of don't want to sing it like that. And then it just ends up being a different song. So we've kind of settled on like whoever wrote it just sings lead. And maybe it won't always be that way. But for this album, it is the case that whoever's singing lead is the writer of the song.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess that would make sense too, especially if this is kind of like a almost like a collage in a way, where everybody's bringing something in and making a whole piece from it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and like as far as like writing credits go, we just decided, at least for this album, we were like, it's too interwoven to attribute one person with the writing, like compositionally or lyrically. So we're just gonna say like we all get an even split as far as like the writer goes.
Right. So were there a little bit along the same lines, like especially for, you know, question for Libby and Eli. Libby, I know you did, you were in a different duo called Two We. You also did some work with Kelly Bosworth. And then for Eli, man, I saw recently, I saw the video of, I think, Miss T in the Talkbacks, which is so good. Was there anything that you guys learned with those previous collaborations that you brought to this one, to this trio? Are there any big differences that you found in the collaborative process?
I would say for me, what's interesting, well, first of all, the two projects of mine that you just mentioned are both pretty squarely in the like old time / traditional music category, which has its own kind of like set of rules, if that makes sense. Like the way people arrange and record quote unquote traditional music, like what that means is just like traditional like American music basically, is like there's some amount of like respect for history that you have to show and in that world. And so it's like there's only so much you can do. Like you can get pretty creative with it, but there's definitely like some boundaries. So that like influenced those projects a lot. However, I think actually more so than those projects influencing the collaborative process of this one, I would say it's actually the other way around, because like the three of us, like we said, we started working together when we were sophomores in college. And I would say like that was the time when I learned like how to collaborate, how to arrange things, like how to have like a democratic like musical process. And then I like went and applied that to other things. So it's funny that we've like come back together, because I would say like the three of us taught each other how to be in a band, and then we like went and did our own thing, and now we're a band again. So it feels like very natural in a way that other things don't, because this is like the setting in which we all learned how to like play music with other people. Besides, like, you know, Eli and Owen were in like rock bands in high school. I was not, unfortunately. But but I think y'all would still agree with that.
Well, totally. And I think, Libby, I've heard you say before that, like, I don't know, it seems like maybe this isn't true for everyone, or maybe this, I don't know how true this is sort of on the whole, but like it might be that you only get like one or maybe two like honest to God collaborative experience, like musical experiences in your life.
Yeah, it's pretty rare to
they're
find.
Hard to come by. Yeah. And that was something that surprised me after we sort of stopped playing together in college, or, you know, I was playing with other people in the Chicago folk scene more. You know, I was in like other bands, but they, you know, even if I was like technically a full member, they never felt like nearly as collaborative. Like there was probably a gig deadline, you know, gigs, a thing we didn't have in college.
Yeah.
You know, there's probably like something you were preparing the arrangement for, so that you didn't have to just have like endless time, and everyone, you know, had just like endless opportunity to hold court about why their arrangement opinion is correct and valid. Like, you know, there was like things had to move along. And for some reason, the three of us together, like, we just get into this. It's probably terrible to listen to if you're outside of it, but there's just like endless debate. It's like Congress.
It's arranging. Terrible.
It's, yeah. I mean, it's like at times terrible to be a part of, but
it works for us.
It is like truly democratic, like as democratic can be. You know, you're like, it feels like a church board meeting or something. But
Alec hated it.
Oh yeah, it drove Alec nuts. But I don't know why. I think the three of us probably haven't had that level of collaboration anywhere else in our musical lives, which is probably one of the main reasons that we decided that this band was worth investing in, because it's such like a special thing, and you get us like a unique synthesis that you can't get anywhere else, you know? So I think that's kind of what this band brings to the table for all of us.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you talk about that. Did you ever feel like you guys dealt with what is known as revertigo? Like where, for example, you know, I was definitely one way in high school, and then since then I like to view myself as much different. I think I read something from Owen saying like, will we ever get to a time where we don't look back a couple years ago and feel like a complete idiot? but so to that point, like, you know, I like to think that, oh, I've changed a lot. And, you know, when all of my friends who I'm still friends with from my childhood, like we all moved separate ways, right? And then, you know, you do all these different things and you have these new experiences, and when you meet up with your friends, like at least for me, I'm like, oh, I can't wait for them to see, you know, how different I've become and all this stuff. And then as soon as I'm with them, instantly like revert back to exactly how things were. Did you guys have a feeling of that, or did you have to overcome it, or did you lean in?
I would say musically we musically I would say we genuinely did mature and change. Like the music we were making in college was like unhinged. and I would say like when we got back together and we're like playing music together again, the choices we were making were like, if you can believe it, a lot more tasteful than before. But I would say, like, personality-wise, the three of us are, like, tragically set in our ways. Like, like I would say, like, I don't think, I mean, yeah, like, we're very distinct people.
What a great expression. Tragically set in our ways.
We're like, where our personalities aren't going anywhere, so like there was no like reverting necessarily, because it was like, I don't know, that's not how the three of us are. Like, obviously we've grown, but I would
but
say
we're
like,
just as big a dorks as we were.
yeah, and especially together, it's like a comfort thing. Mm-hmm. I think we've all learned how to like communicate better, mm-hmm. but yeah, I would say like musically was the biggest way that I felt we like changed from when we'd been hanging out before.
And actually, to go back to sort of the beginning of this question, Jake, you're asking, you know, about other projects that like I specifically played in. And I think, yeah, they definitely all like musically informed this current project. So like exactly Libby's point, you know, we pretty much like stopped playing together, and then more or less 3 years went by. And the last year of us playing together was like, Libby's already living in New York. So it was, you know, sort of very sparse. And, you know, we definitely all had, I can, you know, only speak for myself, but I definitely had lots of different types of musical experiences and just learned how to be a bass player instead of like the you know, weird type of thing that I was doing in our previous band. You know, it's like, I think we all kind of learned like what the roles of our instruments, you know, what they actually did in lots of different
sides. Right, because we were coming from a classical background initially, so it was like bass. Yeah, that like we're just playing like classical guitar, classical bass, and classical violin operate very differently than they do in basically any other musical setting, you know. I don't know. That's probably a very long-winded, winding answer.
But... yeah. So I guess to me, it seems like there's a lot of, you know, serendipity and a lot of, you know, also kind of chance when you decide like, all right, you know what? Fuck it. Three of us, let's do this. We collaborated great in the past. Let's, you know, we're older now. Like, let's make this happen. At what point in time during the process, you know, you guys had a Kickstarter campaign to fund the album that, like I said, was successful. At what point in time were you like, okay, this kind of long shot paid off? Like, this is working. When did you know for each of you?
I would say I don't know how to say this without sounding jaded. I would say like I personally felt like it was like, I would say like musically and otherwise, I felt like it was working. Like that's what made us run the Kickstarter and decide to make an album, as we were like, this works, this is working, I like the way it sounds. And I still feel that way. Like, I still really like this music, obviously.
Libby, was that before or after you made a move to Nashville?
A little bit of both. Like, basically what happened for me was I was working in New York as like a fiddler slash like whatever violinist, and Eli was like really pushing us having a band together. This is like pre-pandemic, and I was like, I don't know, I'm a pretty different musician now, I don't think I'm into that. And then Eli sent me one of Owen's songs that Owen had sent Eli a recording of, and I was like, oh shit, this is really good. I was like, never mind, this song I like this. And actually, I don't even think that song made it on the album, but it's still a great song. But and so like I had it on my radar, and then like you said, everything's been extremely serendipitous. So then like the pandemic hit and we were like, let's move to Nashville, and I was like, cool, I guess like this thought that we had months ago is actually gonna happen. And as we were putting music together, we were all kind of tentatively still like, is this good? Is this a thing that we're actually trying to pursue? And then we arrived at that decision after we'd been playing together for a while in our house during the pandemic. And then, yeah, like then from that point on, it was sort of like all in. Like, I feel like that was sort of an unspoken thing, but it was like when we decided we were going to do it, we're like, okay, we're really going to actually do this. And yeah, from that point on, I feel like I like really think this work music works. Like, jury's still out on whether or not the rest of the world thinks it works, but I know how I feel about it, which is a rare thing for me, because I like tend to be very critical, as you can probably tell. And so, like, to feel like committed to something and convinced by something, I was like, that feels good, you know. Nice to feel that way about something. But yeah. Eli, when did you feel like you knew, like, it, you thought it worked?
I mean, I there's definitely been different, like, layers. Like, so right before the Kickstarter, you know, it's like you're asking all your friends for a bunch of money. You better be pretty sure that, like,
yeah, right.
the thing is, like, worth doing, yeah, right? So
sure.
Definitely there's, you know, definitely a point that I thought it worked, just like Libby did. But honestly, like, you know, you have your sort of doubts along the way, and you know, you're just kind of wondering, like, is this, like, we're too much time in this? Like, when you made the album, that's another point where, you know, I was like, definitely this is working. But I feel like we just went on like a week-long Midwest tour, and after, like, playing, you know, 5 shows in 5 days, I, like, watched the sort of the set get tighter, and, like, our vocal harmonies, something that comes naturally to probably none of us. Libby's definitely the best vocal harmony singer amongst the three of us, and, like, Owen and I are pretty new to singing, but, you know, it's like just watching our strength or our weaknesses sort of get ironed out, and, like, the set come together, I was like, okay, this is cool, like, this is working. So there's definitely been stages to thinking that, and it's been nice most recently, like, hitting the road to see it kind of come together in that way too.
Yeah, there's something too, like, I don't know why it's so hard to do, because it seems like this should obviously be every project's guiding light, but at least in my experience, it is actually quite hard to make music that you actually would listen to. Like, it seems like everything you do should be such that you would endorse it by, like, actually, yes, I'm making the music that I like, even if this didn't come from me. But that's actually, like, it's just so hard to do. It's, like, so easy to accidentally make music that's, like, similar to the music you like, or actually different than the music you like, or this is just something I know about, but it's not really what I'm into right now. But with this project, it did, you know, just kind of like our like North Star was always just like, would we actually listen to this? And do, you know, critically speaking, like, would we recommend this to a friend? And there was a point when we were, like, working on the demos, you know, as we, like, first arranged this material. And, you know, as we were, like, critically thinking about the arrangements we had and everything, and you, like, spent some time listening to the demos, I was like, oh, I am actually listening to these demos for pleasure to some extent. Like, I'm not just listening to them to consider, like, are those harmonies in tune, and does this need a third chorus or not? Like, I'm listening to these just because I think they sound good. And that was a real moment when I was like, oh, we finally did it. Like, we're actually making music that I would totally recommend to someone if I just stumbled across it. Which was, I don't know why it's so hard to get to that point, but for like, kind of for the first time in my musical life, I'm like, cool, I'm, like, doing something that, like, I would believe in, even if I wasn't in it, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's really cool. It kind of reminds me of something I believe Ira Glass was saying. I think he was talking about writing, but he was saying, like, the reason that we pursue something like writing or music or film or whatever it is, right, a creative endeavor, is because we have good taste, right? And we know which things that we like, and you try to make things like that, and they fall short a lot of the times. And you know that because you have good taste, and you know that maybe your stuff isn't quite there yet, but you keep going, then eventually you're able to create something that is like what inspired you to start in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Go Ira Glass.
Yeah, so that just kind of reminded me a little bit of like what you were saying there, Owen, that it's like, you know, I really want to make something that I of course there's a little bit of, you know, cringe associated with like if somebody just caught you listening to your own, like if somebody was like, yeah, hey Jake, what are you listening to? I'm like, oh, the Setlist podcast. I'm like, what? This guy's a narcissist. And they're right. But like it is cool when you do something that isn't I guess tone deaf by your own standards. And I think it's really hard to do.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not trying to be in here like Kanye and you walk into my house and I'm blasting my own album or anything. But
yeah.
There's something that happens where it's like, is it hard to listen to yourself or is it okay to listen to yourself? And if it's okay to listen to yourself, then you can start to ask yourself those questions of like, how would I feel if this wasn't my own voice?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's very cool. All right, it's awesome that you guys feel that way. I like I've said before, I think this album's excellent and really, I think, captures like this very tender, this tender like coming of age theme very well. Owen, we talked a little bit about your time in the Peace Corps and I didn't notice anything that was very on the nose, at least in the album, referring to your time in Senegal. Was there stuff while you were there that made it onto this album or influenced what you did with this record?
Yeah, there's like, I would have to count them up, but there's like at least 5 songs that I wrote while I was in Senegal. And, you know, at the time of my writing them, there was really like no agenda for any of the music I was working on at that time. I didn't even know if I was going to like try to get back into music professionally after my service, which is honestly like kind of liberating from a writing perspective to like, it can be really hard, I think, to write without agenda. And in Senegal, you know, you're just like, I was like living in a hut in the desert and, you know, I'm surrounded by people, but none of them speak English and none of them have any real like cultural context to like be critical of the music that I'm working on, you know? So like, to some extent, there's like no critical ears for like dozens or hundreds of miles from where I'm working on this stuff, which was actually really liberating, you know, a unique place to write some music from. But still, when I was working on it, I still wanted it to like not be too specific or like specific in a certain kind of way. And I think that's true of like good country music in general, is like, it's nice when it tells a story, and like what's powerful about the stories is that they are specific, but they're specific to an emotion. They're not specific to like a chronological event that would keep it from being relatable. So like the song Saint Louis, for example, is about Saint Louis, Senegal, and kind of walking around the city on New Year's Eve and having a bad time. But the only thing that's like specific in the lyrics to Saint Louis is just the name of the city.
Northern Sands.
But that's not specific to like, that's anywhere. I mean, anywhere can have sand, you know.
Sands of St. Louis, Missouri.
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, a lot of this, at least a handful of my songs were written in that time. They were definitely everything of mine that's on the album is deeply informed by that time. Just because, I don't know, it was a unique experience and definitely kind of turned my perspective on its head in a number of ways.
I'm sure. Do you guys, I know, Libby, you did, you're doing all kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, research for the Smithsonian and time on Broadway. And then, you know, were there anything with those experiences, like this, you know, I guess all of you have experience like from a, academic perspective, but did some of that make it into the album or some of the stories that you were trying to tell?
I would say that a lot of that work, I don't know, more influences some of my more like the trad music that I do, because that is like basically like, if you're not, I don't know, I always assume that everyone knows what this means, so like quick refresher for anyone who listens to this, but like trad music, the tradition with that is very research based. It's a lot of like digging up old songs, old tunes, and then like making them kind of your own and recording them. So that's where the like Smithsonian research comes from. And then I would say like some of like the musical things that I incorporate into that work did end up on the album in more of like an arrangement way, but not so much like lyrical content. Like a lot of my lyrics are, Owen's are very like story driven lyrics, and then my lyrics, and I mean, you know, not to like oversimplify them, like there's obviously a lot of like feeling and reflection in his lyrics too, but my lyrics are almost exclusively reflection. And I don't know, there's not so much, my songs often I think try to capture more of like an inner world experience rather than like a retelling of a story, if that makes sense. So it's hard to trace back, I would say, like the beginnings of a lot of those songs, but I don't know, that was kind of a confusing answer, but
no, not at all. I think if I'm getting it right, it's like you, maybe you carry a feeling with you and then you examine that feeling, not necessarily knowing right. where it came from or where it's going or something like that.
Yeah, totally. And I guess I would say like a lot of the music I was playing in New York, regardless of like, yeah, the Broadway stuff and all that, I was very influenced by the musicians that I was around there musically, Alec being one of them. There's a really awesome, vibrant, like weirdo folk world in New York that goes beyond your sort of traditional idea of folk music.
Well, we also had our drummer on the album.
Oh, was also from New York.
He's also from New York, yeah. Jason Berger. And I mean, he, it's funny because we, you know, I've played with drummers here in Nashville, and you know, we give them drummers who are like absolutely amazing and just make us better musicians just by being in the same room with them, let alone playing with them. And we always give, you know, they come to rehearsal having learned the songs and they're like, was this Jason on the record? And they're like, I should have known. He's like, yeah. He's such a genius. He has such a distinct voice. Cool. It's, you know, like really true. Some of these grooves he came up with are just like, to give like a small subtle example, on the chorus entrance, like his drum entrance in the very last song is like two bars into the chorus. Like you'd think if he's going to come in on the chorus, he'd come in at the beginning of it, but he like delays it by two bars or whatever. And it's like such just like an inspired, cool decision that like is so thoughtful and for some reason like makes the tune just like a lot better, you know, or just adds to it in a really, really cool, positive way. And like, I would never think to do that.
Yeah. Well, Eli, for you, it kind of seemed like you were the catalyst for getting the band back together. what was it, you know, what was it through all of your shows and the bluegrass that made you want to get this sound out and to get the three of you playing again?
Yeah, well, it definitely, the drive to get the band back together definitely didn't have anything to do with the current sound of the band, because that, as kind of Libby said, very much came about after we played the songs for each other and then, you know, maybe tried them acoustically and were like, liked the songs, but felt like that wasn't a good approach for them. So I honestly think, kind of back to what we were talking about earlier, though, like, you only kind of have one like group of true collaborators in your musical life, or it's hard to find more than that. I feel like that was for me the feeling that I was trying to come back to. It's just like I was just missing that, basically. You know, I was really enjoying playing with lots of different people in Chicago and I always really enjoy playing with different people. You mentioned Tess and Thomas, Miss Tess and the Talkbacks. And that's been a more recent development, but it's just been like crazy fun to play with them. So I really love playing, you know, with all sorts of bands and genres, but it's hard to find that true collaboration. And it's, you know, when you have it, it's special and you kind of fiend for it. So I was jonesing for that experience again.
Yeah. So at the time of this recording, Watch Me Learn hasn't been released, but have you been surprised by the feedback that you have gotten, or is it what you expected?
Yeah. I mean, we're kind of finding that it is hard to get this in country circles, which I think makes sense in hindsight. And we're kind of going more the indie avenue now. And it's probably just one of those situations where to the country world, we're indie, and to the indie world, we're country, which I think is actually kind of a cool place to live.
Sure.
So, I mean, that's kind of been we're, you know, especially for like our first release, a big part of it is just trying to figure out like who your audience is and where this music does well. But I would say that's kind of been the central theme of our feedback thus far is that this can do well in the indie world. So we're kind of trying to pivot that direction now.
Awesome. So where do you go from here?
I would say like for now, like we're just really focusing on trying to set ourselves up to play more live shows. We had mm-hmm. so much fun. Like, you know, we spent so much time just playing for each other during the pandemic, and we're just like, I'm excited about the album, but I think I'm even more excited about like performing together, because we got to do our first tour together this past week and it was really fun, and I just want to like play this music for people. I'm like ready to just like do it for real, because that's such a treat after so long of not being able to perform just in general. So I'd say like that's kind of the next step, is just getting our touring going.
Well, and to kind of fuse those two ideas together in terms of like reception and then what's next. I think Owen's exactly right. We're kind of like trying to figure out how to tailor it, the presentation for like, you know, critical reception or whatever, if you will. But like, in terms of like,
I think we're just trying to figure out who our audience is.
Yeah, trying to figure out who our audience is. And I think that our friends, you know, back home, this is a Midwest tour, so kind of a homecoming tour. And like, I was genuinely blown away by how like psyched people were about it, which, you know, in terms of, yeah, like is sort of a different type of reception. And it was like, it was very energizing, I guess, just like, I don't know, to play venues that I've played in Chicago before, but, you know, have like a packed room of people who are like excited to hear the music, was just super fun. And I want more of that.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, yeah, I'm sure people want more of that. I can say I definitely do. So what's the best way for people to listen to the music and to catch up with everybody, and keep up with what you're doing?
Yeah, go ahead, Lily.
We've got the social medias, all of them. Instagram, Dallas. Luckily, our name is weird enough that I think we're either Dallas Ugly or Dallas Ugly Band on all the platforms, so it's easy to find. And our album comes out streaming everywhere on April 8th. So yeah.
Haven't slept well in weeks.
All right. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Libby, Eli, and Owen for joining me today to talk on this podcast. It was not today, if I'm being honest, but you know what I mean. Be sure to stick around to the end. We're going to be playing the titular track, Watch Me Learn. The album, Watch Me Learn, is available now for stream and purchase. So you can head to their website, dallasugly.com. Pick yourself a physical copy and find tour dates near you. You know well by now, the best way to support musicians that you love is to see them live and to get physical copies of their albums and merchandise. If you're interested in supporting us and enjoy the podcast, please head to our website, setlist.community. That's where you're going to find all of our previous podcasts, our blog posts, and our merchandise. Thanks again for tuning in. Until next time, guys, please enjoy Watch Me Learn by Dallas Willard. It's knowing that I don't know how to stay. A feeling I know too well, where I never fell deep enough in love to stick around. But our kiss, it faded. We're not lovers anymore, just two friends who adore old David Hales. And I've been busy all the time. Because